The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Hey, are you looking for a job? Are you good on your feet? Are you good with answering questions? You can handle the spotlight. You can handle the heat of the moment, a live environment. Are you good there? Is that something you'd be comfortable in? Like something like what I do. If that's right up your alley, I think there's going to be a job opening. Maybe by the end of the year. I don't know how fast it's going to happen. But Karine Jean-Pierre, who's the new White House press secretary coming in on the heels of Jen Psaki. You'll circle back around to Jen Psaki now that she's making the big bucks with MSNBC or wherever she went. But Karine Jean-Pierre, the White House press secretary, she's well-educated and all this stuff, but I'm like, what? She's unimpressive to the point of it being uncomfortable to watch her. So I got a couple of clips I'm going to play for you. I'm just, every time I watch her, I'm like, what? How did you get this job? Like, what's going on here? Prior to her role on the campaign, so she was a senior communication and political roles in the Biden administration, the Biden campaign, and then Vice President Biden in the Obama administration. Prior to her role on the campaign, she served as chief affairs officer for MoveOn.org. Of course she did. And an NBC and MSNBC political analyst, which almost sounds like a contradiction in terms. Jean-Pierre served as regional political director for the White House Office of Political Affairs during the Obama and Biden administration and as deputy battleground states director for President Obama's 2012 reelection campaign. She's been around a little while. She served as Southeast regional political director for President Obama's 2008 campaign, deputy campaign manager for Martin O'Malley, for president, whoever that is, campaign manager for the ACLU's Reproductive Freedom Initiative. Of course. And Deputy Chief of Staff and Director of Legislative and Budget Affairs for two members in the New York City Council, once again. Of course. But when I listen to her, God bless her. Like, you're not very good at your job. Or you're just bad at lying. Or you did okay in school and you could get some pretty significant jobs, some pretty impressive jobs. But you're actually not all that sharp. I mean, like, does her driveway make it to the end of the street? I mean, I don't know. Not the brightest lamp on the street. Driveway doesn't quite make it to the road. Whatever little euphemism you want to use, but it's really pretty sad. I'm going to play a couple of clips there, Karine Jean-Pierre, which are unfortunately almost laughable. But doesn't that just go hand in hand with the president of the United States is clearly compromised? And so we'll hear a clip when Steve Doocy from Fox News asks her a question about the plummeting stock market. And then Don Lemon from CNN is talking to her and dares to ask her about the physical and mental health of the president. And the way she handles both those things, I'm like, listen, this is just like a kabuki theater up there in the White House. It's just unbelievably bad. So we'll do that, and then I'm going to talk about the House actually passes the Senate bill providing security to Supreme Court justices' families. Never mind the fact that all these demonstrations outside, and then the what looked like an assassination attempt that was coming up on Kavanaugh. They caught that guy, turned himself in. AOC was getting in the way of all that stuff, trying not to, because they couldn't get a gun control bill done. She didn't want to talk about protecting people at the Supreme Court. And by the way, it is a federal offense to picket and demonstrate outside of any federal judge's house or office, because that's, you're trying to influence the court, and that there, that's a federal law violation. And had they done this, and President Trump, from my interview with him yesterday, if you missed that, you want to hear that. Interviewed him yesterday morning and then played that on the show yesterday. You can get that on the podcast or Facebook Live or YouTube Live at the Steve Noble Show page at either of those places. But he talked about that obviously if a bunch of, let's say a bunch of pro-lifers showed up outside of Elena Kagan's house and were out there protesting, they would throw them in jail. I mean, faster than you could say boo, they would be all over that like stink on a monkey. But because it's Roe versus Wade, And it's the pro-abortion crowd, the pro-choice crowd out there demonstrating against those nasty 14th century conservative judges. They just look the other way. And Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and even the president just kind of write it off, even though in the Senate they overwhelmingly said, yeah, we need to protect the justices. Thank you very much. But in the House, they were dilly-dallying around, but they finally passed it. So we'll talk about that. Some school board issues here in Wake County, where I live, one of the biggest school board counties, one of the biggest school board areas in the country. We're going to talk about that because there's a huge opportunity there. I want to tie that into the NSBA's domestic terrorism letter, that little exchange they had with the FBI. I want to go through kind of a lengthy article about written that showed up on Glenn Beck's website by Mr. Roth, debunked and explained, no, greedy oil companies are not to blame for gas prices. It's a good lesson just in understanding everything that goes into that. And then I'm going to finish with kind of a creepy story that's going to get more creepy as time goes by. The Google engineer who has just bounced out of there because he's claiming that their AI device, which they call Llamata or whatever, it's got an acronym, is sentient, meaning it's self-aware, which takes you into all kinds of movies that we've all seen, not the least of which starred Arnold Schwarzenegger, right? That whole series. So we'll get into that. But today, as a reminder, if you don't have a flag out in front of your house, I would like to suggest that you get one. Today is Flag Day, June 14th. Happens to be President Trump's birthday, turned 76 today. I asked him about that yesterday, had a little fun with that. But it is Flag Day because on June 14th in 1777, that was the first official American flag. So on Flag Day, we celebrate that and remember that. And I am an honest historian. That's why I started teaching U.S. history this past year and will continue that this fall. NobleUSchool.com. NobleU, that's the letter U. NobleUSchool.com. If you have students or sons or daughters or grandsons or granddaughters in high school or even eighth grade, I want to teach them U.S. history accurately and through a biblical lens or civics. So that's NobleUSchool.com. But I'm a very honest, humble U.S. historian teacher now, and there's the good, there's the bad, and the ugly. But I am deeply blessed and grateful that God, by God's providence, I was born in America, and I've been raised in America, and I live in America, and in many ways, and enjoying the fruit of the American experiment that's been going on for really, that if you go all the way back, you got to go back about 500 years to fully understand it. And so on Flag Day, if you don't have a flag out for Flag Day for the upcoming 4th of July, listen, I'm not overlooking any of the troubling things from America's past or present, you know, like 62 million dead babies on our watch. But I am able to walk and chew gum at the same time and be deeply appreciative for all the amazing things that this country has done for me and has done for the world and the leadership has provided, while at the same time being able to lament over the things that we should lament over. So Flag Day today. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. A little weird. It's a great little groove, isn't it? Steely Dan. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you. And like I mentioned earlier, if you didn't hear my interview with President Trump yesterday, make sure you go check that out. Just grab the podcast. We're on all the major podcast platforms, so you can get it there. Or you can watch when we play it on the radio show. That's on Facebook Live or YouTube Live. You can go to the YouTube page or the Facebook page, The Steve Noble Show. You can get it there. Links to all those things and all the radio stations we're on, all that kind of stuff. Plus, the podcast also is on our homepage at the regular website, thestevenobleshow.com. And one other thing, self-promoting, if you have children or grandchildren, sons or daughters, hopefully that's not offensive to you that I'm actually implying there's only two options, high school or eighth grade. And I've been teaching for 10 years now. I've taught over 600 students. This fall right now, I've got about 120 so far signed up and teaching U.S. history, which is two semesters. Honest, straightforward, incorporating the news of the day so that things that happened 300 years ago all of a sudden make sense in light of what's going on today. It's really a great way to teach. It's the only way I know how to teach because I do radio 5 days a week. So it makes for a really dynamic environment where you make it relevant. U.S. history, two semesters. Civics and Constitution, two semesters. Christian ethics is a one semester class. That's straight out of my master's degree material. So these are all really important classes, especially as we try to train the next generation who are going to be taking things over. as we go to be with the Lord. And so it's such an important calling. I love doing it. I'm good at it. And students love it. Parents love it. It's really been a great thing. So if you have students, son or daughter or grandchildren who are in the homeschooling world, or I'm going to start putting this information out there as well. I want public school students to audit the class. They'll get a way reduced rate because they're probably not going to have time to do the homework and all the other stuff. But I want them to sit, quote unquote, sit in on the lectures. So the video that we, the video classroom that we're going to give everybody every week is the class I just taught, because I incorporate breaking news of the day in the classroom, just like I do here on the show. I mean, I can't teach any other way. And that makes it very relevant, brings it alive, because you see the material in the textbook and everything all of a sudden makes sense, because you're looking at what's going on in the world right now. And you're like, wow, okay, so this does matter. It is relevant. It's a great way to teach. So what they're going to see if they're taking it online is the class I literally just taught that week. I'm not doing ethics online, at least not yet. That's a much more in-depth kind of conversational environment. But U.S. history and civics, man, you're watching the class I just taught and incorporating the news of the day. So the class I taught last fall, I can't play this fall, because that was pre-Ukraine. And then in the spring, we're talking about Ukraine and all this kind of stuff. So that's the way it works. So if you have children or grandchildren in the homeschool world or in public school, and they just need to get the red pill version of U.S. history, the accurate one, the non-leftist progressive version, the accurate one, because that's my allegiance is to the truth as a Christian. Okay, that's the deal. And then in civics, there's just massive ignorance. And so I'm going to get public school students to hopefully audit those classes as well, and at least be with us and watch the lectures each week and my interaction with the students that are their age. And it's been awesome. So we're going to keep working on that, and hopefully the Lord will bless that and grow that every year. And so that's out there. NobleUschool.com. NobleU, that's like you as in university, NobleUschool.com. And make sure if you know anybody else that have kids in that realm, suggest it to them. It really is unique, because how many high school teachers do you have that are actually talk radio show hosts at the same time? Probably none. Anyway, there's that. So let's talk about Karine Jean-Pierre, the new White House press secretary. This is just kind of sad. Are we doing the Ducey one first? All right, this is Steve Ducey's asking her about the train wreck stock market that President Biden tried to take credit for not that long ago, and now it's a train wreck. So check this out. I want to get your gauge on this one.
President Biden once bragged about the stock market hitting record after record after record on my watch. How about now?
Meaning the stock market.
All the gains from President Biden's time in office have been wiped out.
So, as you know, we're watching closely. We know families are concerned about inflation in the stock market. That is something that the president is really aware of. And so, look, we face global challenges. We've talked about this. We're not the only country dealing with what we're seeing at the moment as it relates to inflation. You know, Putin's price hike, inflation, coming out of a once in a generation global pandemic. All of those things play a factor. The way that we see this is that the American people are well positioned to face these challenges because of the economic historic gains that we have made under this president in the last 16 months.
What? Did she answer that? There's not really an answer there, right? It's just she flips to her page in her three-ring binder, where if they ask about the stock market, here's your answer, which is just go around, deny, rephrase, and she's just bumbling all over the place. And Americans are well situated to bear this? Really, how? When the average American family doesn't even have enough money in savings to pay for a $1,000 car repair. How are they situated to deal with this? They're so detached. It's so offensive to me that they won't engage in a real conversation. But remember, that's not her job. Her job is to cover for the administration. That's her job. And unfortunately, she's terrible at it. I mean, she's just kind of bumbling. And then this, let's play the Don Lemon one. So this is Don Lemon. She's on CNN, where she assumes she's in friendly territory, right? But he brings up apparently a sacred cow on the left, talking about the mental and physical health of this president. So listen to this. And just the way she handles this one is just ridiculous. So this is Karine. Karine Jean-Pierre with Don Lemon from CNN. Go.
Does the president have the stamina, physically and mentally, do you think, to continue on even after 2024?
Don, you're asking me this question. Oh, my gosh. He's the president of the United States. You know, I can't even keep up with it. We just got back from New Mexico. We just got back from California. That is not a question that we should be even asking. Just look at the work that he does. Look what how he's delivering for the American public. Look, that article that we're talking about is hearsay. It's salacious. That's not what we care about. We care about how are we going to deliver for the American people? How are we going to make their lives better?
Ms. Jean-Pierre, what planet do you currently live on? I mean, this is remarkable to me. You can't even ask the question. Why not? Because, Don Lemon, you're a lib. A lib can't ask the question about the president's mental and physical stamina and ability. And going into 2024, which is 2 years away, you can't ask that question. Only white Republicans ask that question. The patriarchy asks that question. White supremacists ask that question. Pro-lifers ask that question. We don't ask that question. Why not, ma'am? Why is that off the table? And unfortunately, I mean, this is going to sound horrible, but she doesn't communicate a whole lot more effectively than her boss. And she's just all over the map. And you can't ask that question. He's the president. I can't hardly keep up with him. Really? Well, that's not great. And that's our White House press secretary. Well, not ours. She's not elected, but his. And it's just unbelievable that she's the one. But that's her job, and we'll see how long it lasts. So if you have any interest in being the White House press secretary, maybe put your resume in. But if you have a problem dodging questions, if you struggle a little to lie, paint over things, not tell the truth, then perhaps that job's not for you. All right, when we come back, we'll talk about protecting our Supreme Court justices. Who's that picture on the screen right now? What are you doing? Who is that? I'll talk to my intern when we're done. White House justices, our Supreme Court justices, a bunch of other things. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. I love that song. That's why I let it play. And continuing on, lots of different news stories here I wanted to share with you and some points to make, always through a biblical lens, as accurately as I can. Okay, I'm always processing all this stuff through a biblical lens. But my flesh is fully engaged as well, so every once in a while I'm too snarky, and I'll make fun of things that I probably shouldn't make fun of. And every once in a while I walk away from the studio. I'm like, okay, Lord, I got to repent for that. So I'm doing the best I can. But that's the way we should do this, as we take in the news stories of the day or a movie or whatever. You know, like the upcoming Disney Pixar movie about the origin story of Buzz Lightyear. So they had a gay kiss in there. There's an African-American gal that's a part of the storyline because the movie looks really cool. Pixar just keeps doing better and better and more amazing animation all the time. But then they had the gay kiss in there and they took that out, this lesbian character and her partner, whatever. And they took that out. But then once Disney publicly, you know, over the last couple months, which we've covered here on the show and played a lot of video, man, they're just going all in on the LGBTQ+ IA, whatever agenda. And I know they've been doing that for a while, but now they're fully out of the closet, fully engaged, fly that up to the flagpole at the top of the Magic Kingdom castle. And they're not hiding anything. And so they put it back in. So that's coming out. I think June 17th, that's coming out this weekend, Buzz Lightyear, which otherwise looks really cool. And now you got to wrestle with, you know, I can handle that obviously as an adult, but you're going to take your 6-year-old, your 7-year-old. And again, that's why I'm going to talk here in a second about school board stuff, because they're just planting these little seeds over time, little seed here, little seed there, little water, a little Miracle-Gro. It starts when they're in kindergarten. By the time they're in sixth grade, you're like, what happened to my kid? That's because they've been marinating in all kinds of progressive, liberal, godless garbage. And you thought you were just sending them off to some nice teachers down the street and everything was fine. It's not. I'll ask you the same question I would ask Karine Jean-Pierre at the White House press secretary office. What planet do you live on? This is the planet Earth, friend. The place is deeply broken and dark and getting darker. So we have to engage that. Speaking of dark and getting darker. So you knew about this, the what almost turned into, it looked like an assassination attempt on Judge Kavanaugh. And so the House finally, just today, passed a bill, 396 to 27. 27 voted against this. The bill was to increase security for Supreme Court justices' immediate families on Tuesday, approving a measure that had already been passed by unanimous consent in the Senate. So in the Senate, they got it right. But in the House, 27 people chose not to say yes to that bill. We want to provide additional protection for Supreme Court justices, you know, since there's assassination attempts and stuff like that going on. And people, crazy, degenerate, reprobate mind people showing up outside of their houses now because of the Roe versus Wade impending decision. Please, Lord, let it get overthrown. And 27 people said, no, we're not going to pass that. Well, I'm voting against that. What party do you think those 27 people were a member of? Oh, great guess. The Democrat Party. The bill expands an existing statute that currently only covers the justices themselves, as well as Supreme Court officers and employees. Of course, there is a federal law, did you know, that prohibits any kind of protest, any activity going on outside the offices or homes, private places of federal judges, because that's, you're trying to influence the judge. It's like tampering with a jury. It's the same thing. There's a federal law against that, and they're not enforcing it, not once, not Biden. He doesn't say one word about it. He's all for the American way, protesting. Yeah. Except in this case, dude, it's against the law, the federal law, which you're supposed to be the enforcer of federal law. That's the president's job in the executive branch. He enforces the laws. The Congress passes the laws, the legislative branch. You, sir, enforce the laws. But you don't want to enforce this one because you bow down at the altar of killing babies, otherwise known as abortion. And so he says nothing about it, even though it's a federal law. AOC was actually trying to block this the other day in the House because she was mad they didn't pass gun legislation first. We can't get that done. Oh, so we can. This is what she said. Oh, so we can pass protections for us and here easily, right? But we can't pass protections for everyday people? I think not. So she was actively trying to not get that one even voted on, but she lost. And of course, she voted against it. AOC. So pray for our chief justices. If this keeps happening, we just fold the judicial branch right into the legislative branch, because now they're just another political tool that you can manipulate by protest and intimidation and just scare them. And then what good men and women that could and would serve well on the Supreme Court want that job? Hey, if I wanted to risk my life, I would have joined the military, not choose to be a federal judge and then have that incredible honor of being nominated to be on the Supreme Court. But no, it's going to risk not only my life, but my family's life. Forget it. That's why we have federal laws against that. Mr. Biden. Man. All right, now let me do the school board thing. So here in Wake County, one of the biggest school systems in the country. This is great. I love this. I love this title of this. This is in the news and Disturber here locally. Wake School Board will be up for grabs this year. Majority won't seek election. Praise the Lord. Do you know what the deal is with your school board, wherever you live? If you're not here in the Raleigh area in Wake County, do you know what the deal is with your school board, friend? You better find out. Love your neighbor as yourself. Well, Steve, my kids aren't in school anymore. That, you think that matters? It doesn't. Love your neighbor as yourself. Yeah, but my kids are all grown. Love your neighbor as yourself. Yeah, but I don't have kids in the public school. We homeschool. Love your neighbor as yourself. I send my kids to a private Christian school. Awesome. Good for you. Love your neighbor as yourself. Doesn't matter whether your kids are in there. Doesn't matter whether you have kids. You love your neighbor as yourself. And our children are being emotionally, spiritually, mentally abused in many, many ways in the public school system. So how can you turn a blind eye to that? You should not, nor can you. That would be a sin. You're walking by the guy on the side of the road. That's why Jesus told that story. So Wake School Board up for grabs. The Wake County School Board will see major turnover this year. Thank you, Jesus. As a majority of its members don't plan to seek re-election to lead North Carolina's largest school system. 4 of the 9 school board members say they won't run for another term. And a 5th member says it's unlikely she'll seek re-election. This fall's election could decide whether Wake continues to have a left-leaning, that's an understatement, school board majority or shifts to a more conservative direction. Which, by the way, there used to be a conservative control of the Wake County School Board here locally. That was about 11 years ago. And then we get all infatuated with the federal level and we just give it over. And so liberals and liberal leaning, a couple of quote-unquote Republicans or conservatives, quote-unquote, who have been very liberal-leaning in their activities there, but it's controlled by liberals. And so that you squeeze a lemon, what do you get? Lemon juice. And so maybe they're just getting out of there because they don't want to face, you know, us. And so there's at least four or five great candidates here locally that are running for the Wake County School Board. Michelle Morrow was on just recently. I've met all the other ones. I'm going to start having them on the show here later this summer and all the way up until November. And we have to get to work to take over the school board here in Wake County. We have to take it over. Conservative, right-minded people that happen to be Democrats that don't want our kids being sexualized and groomed in a really dangerous, disturbing worldview, like the whole gender thing in first grade and second grade, and a pregnant man, a flip card to teach you the color white in pre-kindergarten. That's what's going on out there. And so you don't negotiate with that. You take it over. And here in Wake County, and by the way, this is a nonpartisan race. So when you go vote in November, you won't know who the Republicans and the Democrats are, except your good old buddy Steve Noble will tell you, because I'll give you a list. I'll tell you exactly who you should vote for. And that's my personal list. I've been sharing that for years. But we're going to feature these people. And if you don't live here in Wake County, you better get educated. Hopefully you are already. God bless you. But you better get educated about what's going on in your own school board, your own backyard. And again, it doesn't matter whether you have kids in there or not, or whether you have kids at all. If you're calling yourself a Christ follower, if you're a Christian, you love your neighbor as yourself. And our neighbor's kids, as well as for many of us, our own, are being abused and have been for years through this godless, messed up, progressive ideology that is just shot through the public school system, okay? Which was a reminder to me about the NSBA, the domestic terrorism letter, remember that? With the Biden FBI and Merrick Garland. The Wisconsin Association of School Boards, not exactly a conservative bastion, voted Tuesday not to renew its membership with the National School Board Association. Thank goodness. So they're getting whittled down. 19 states have withdrawn their membership since that all happened last fall. That's great. And then 30 states total distanced themselves, quote unquote, by denouncing that FBI letter. And your state, is your state a part of this? Are you a part of the National School Board Association? Because they were the ones behind wanting to label any concerned parent that shows up at a school board meeting and presses back against this garbage that's out there. Oh, you're like a domestic terrorist. Please get educated. Please, you have to get educated. To quote so many people on the other side of the aisle, for our children. Okay? For our children, if they make it out of the womb. All right, I'm going to start this one just with the headline. Debunked and explained, no, greedy oil companies are not to blame for gas prices. This is a little lengthy, but I want to get through it. It's a great economics lesson on why do we pay $5 a gallon on average. There's a lot that goes in there. Who do you blame, which we love to do. So we'll do a little Econ 101 lesson when we come back. And if I have time, Google and their sentient AI. We'll be welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. When are you going to fill up your tank next? That's my question for you. Are you doing it like a little earlier now than you did a few months ago? Because you're like, well, I've got a half a tank. But in 3 days when I really need to fill up, gas might be 10 cents more per gallon than it is right now. $5 a gallon for regular average across the country now, first time in history. And are you making those kinds of choices? You're like, I'm going to fill up now. I'm going to go get the CAT scans for my destructive lawnmower. I'm going to go fill up those 5 gallon tanks now because gas is going to be 25 cents more a gallon in about a month and blah, 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 blah. Those are real questions that a lot of Americans are dealing with. A whole lot of Americans. Most of Americans are not sitting on much money. And I just heard a report earlier today that credit card debt rose 20% last month. That's a surefire sign that people are just don't have the cash flow to do it. So they're grabbing Visa or MasterCard or American Express or whatever and slapping it on there because they still want to take a summer vacation or whatever. And so they're doing that. So credit card debt went up 20% in May. That's alarming, scary stuff. But gas prices. Okay. This was just, I thought, a good article. It's a little lengthy. I'm going to get through the whole thing. Just a good lesson, a reminder of how gas prices are determined. Okay. Everything gets politicized and it gets broken down to sound bites. It's Biden, it's Putin, depends on who you ask. But there's a lot more to it than that. So I'm going to do this just as a courtesy to all of us, just some basic economics when it comes to gas prices. This was from The Blaze yesterday. U.S. gas prices hit an average of $5 a gallon, but who's really to blame? It's probably helpful to start with a breakdown of the components of the gas price. The cost of crude oil is the biggest cost component of a gallon of gas and can skew the cost. In January, via the U.S. Energy Information Administration, the cost of crude in January was just over half the cost of gasoline at 52%. In February, it was 61%, and as of March 2022, it was 59% of the total cost of a gallon of regular gasoline. Given its overall weighting to cost, changes to crude oil prices have an outsized impact on final gas prices. So when you look at the price of the pump, yeah, that's a direct reflection of crude oil. So you jump on your app on your phone and you go look at the markets and you go look at the cost of crude oil and you're like, okay, it's $118 a barrel right now. And a year ago, it was about half that. So that's going to have a huge impact, right? The remaining major cost areas include refining, marketing and distribution, and taxes. As of March 2022, refining was about 18% of the total cost, distribution and marketing about 12%, and taxes, both federal, state, and local, about 12%. It's worth noting that the gas stations make very little, and they don't reap windfalls when prices go up. You know, like because we're all talking, they're price gouging, right? They don't make much money. Most gas stations are independently operated. It's estimated that a retailer's markup on a gallon of gas is around 15 cents. And the profit after expenses averages around 2 cents per gallon. So when you go fill up at the little gas station down the street from you and you put 14 gallons in the tank, they made about 28 cents. I didn't know that. That's why when you walk inside the store, they're selling everything. It's like turning into a clash of Home Depot and Target and the ABC store. I mean, it's crazy how many things you can buy there. Well, that they have to do that. It's kind of like a movie theater. Movie theater doesn't make much money off the movie tickets. They make all their money off of the food and the drinks you get. Same thing's going on in a gas station. So only 2 cents per gallon on average is their actual profit. Think about that the next time you fill up. The cost of crude oil is set by factors of supply and demand. There's also a major oil cartel that decides how much to produce at a given time. That's called OPEC, which factors heavily into supply. On the demand side, the world has seen massive shifts because of decisions made around the world related to the pandemic, of course, and the changes in behaviors that brought it about. As people were locked down, demand plummeted, right? You didn't do as much when you're driving around. You can't go out as much. And as people emerged from lockdowns, demand increased. When China fully emerges from another series of lockdowns, as the number one importer of oil in the world, it will add demand to the worldwide market, which will also shift the price. In 2021, the U.S. used almost 20 million barrels per day, which is why we can all laugh when President Biden comes out and says, hey, we're going to release some of the emergency inventory of the U.S. strategic reserves. We're going to release, you know, 50,000 gallons or whatever, whenever he says it. Just remember, we cook through about 20 million barrels a day. So when he says we're going to release half a million barrels total, you're like, okay, whatever. That doesn't mean anything. That's just a political maneuver. That's all it is. On the supply side, in addition to the whims of OPEC, a variety of domestic and international factors impact oil production. The push for green energy has thwarted the progress that the U.S. was making in energy independence and increasing supply. That was under Trump. The Biden administration canceling oil and gas leases, shutting down pipeline progress, and having substantial red tape for drilling and production all factor into the market calculations on what supply will be like today and going forward. Additionally, the demonization of this critical industry, including the push of ESG, that's environment, social, and governance initiatives. We talked about that recently on the show. To direct capital away from traditional energy projects has led to substantial underinvestment in the sector, which also materially impacts the supply side of the equation because there's not as much capital going into these businesses, okay? That's going to affect how much they can produce. It's estimated that as much as $1 trillion in investment has been postponed or canceled over the past few years, with a large part of that related to the ESG and green energy pushes. So this is coming in and downgrading companies because they're not environmentally conscious enough. They don't have enough LGBTQ and people of color, and they're not part of a big government push, right? So that's like an ESG score. We talked about that recently. And just the green energy push in general. According to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, looking at the U.S. field production of crude oil, while the U.S. was producing almost 13 million barrels per day of crude before the pandemic, we're now only at 11.65 million barrels per day as of March 2022. Okay, so that's a significant loss that's going to affect prices. Europe has largely done the same and is paying the price, quite literally. The Russian invasion of Ukraine took already increasing prices and added a new supply constraint on them to some extent. So you can't blame everything on Putin, okay? Of course, if the U.S. and Europe had been leaning into more traditional sources of energy, the supply would be closer to parity with demand than it is in today, even without the invasion. There's also a monetary policy component to this. The Federal Reserve, which we talked about with David Fisher yesterday, had been managing interest rates appropriately and not printing trillions of dollars. We wouldn't be seeing inflation in everything. Then there's refining. People tend to forget about some of the other costs of gasoline. Refining is the process that turns the crude oil into not only gasoline, but a variety of other products. These costs depend on the time of year and geography. Input costs of items that may be refined with the gasoline can also impact this cost. Like, think about ethanol. The supply-constrained labor market, which we're in, also makes wages more expensive throughout the organizations that do the refining. And when your wages go up, your cost goes up. When your cost goes up, your price goes up. Right? That's how you make money. You got to increase your prices. Distribution and marketing. Oil needs to get from its location to the refinery. Once the oil is processed into gasoline, it doesn't magically appear at the gas stations. All of the distribution related to eventually getting gas to you is intricate and expensive. Given that, listen to this, energy is required to transport the oil and gas, increasing energy costs end up being a double whammy for you at the pump. Again, the labor market is also making wages and distribution more expensive. So as the price of gas goes up, the cost of moving around the country goes up, thereby double whammy increasing the cost of gas at the pump. So we're really getting it from all directions. Then you got taxes. Estimates that on average 57 cents per gallon of gasoline goes to taxes. The federal tax is constant at 18.4 cents. State and local taxes vary widely, which is like if you're in North Carolina and you want to spend less on your tank, go to Virginia or down to South Carolina because their state gas tax is lower. At least this is better than in Europe, according to firm UHY, says that on average, taxes comprise 59% of the cost of the price of petrol and 52% of the cost of the price of diesel. Ouch. So are the oil companies and greed to blame? As noted, the biggest component price in gasoline is set by the market, with a thumb on the scale from OPEC. Especially when Trump's not in office and we're not producing as much of our own energy. During the sharp reduction in demand during the pandemic, major oil companies took huge losses. The five biggest companies, big oil as we like to call them, lost a combined $76 billion. But if you need a guess, right, they were still there for us. Furthermore, nobody offered to pay more to help them out, that's for sure. Now that demand has increased far ahead of supply, the market has driven crude prices up, which has given them more revenue and, as that works, of course, more profit. In a June 10th tweet, Fox Business host Charles Payne, who's excellent, by the way, said in 2020, Exxon lost $22.4 billion. The federal government made $25.8 billion on gas taxes at the same time. While people like to look for a scapegoat, price gouging isn't what we're seeing today. While it's easy to focus on gas prices because you see them every day, the supply-demand imbalance and the availability versus the need for traditional energy sources shows up elsewhere. It flows through the entire economy from the cost of moving goods and components for services to their destinations to a myriad of byproducts, including those impacting the availability and cost of food. Some may say that price controls are the answer. They're never the answer. You may hear that we should nationalize oil companies, see Venezuela. The reality is, here's the punchline, we need energy. Thank you, Mr. Trump. We need lots of it. We need more of it. All kinds of energy. While new greener sources of energy are being developed and scaled, which is fine, we should, side by side, be investing in more traditional sources of energy as well, including nuclear energy. Enter Biden and all the progressive liberals. They're not doing that. They want to go to the Green New Deal, thinking that can be done in 5 years. You train wreck everybody and everything by trying to do that. It's impossible. If they had come out and said, hey, we've got a 30-year plan, a 40-year plan, a 50-year plan, because we know we'd love to get to some other forms of energy so that we're not held captive by oil supplies. But Oil is the deal today. That is reality. So we're going to deal with reality and try to create some new ones in the future and kind of work side by side. But that's clear-headed thinking. That's not politics. So just a little lesson there for all of us. Pray for our nation, as Trump said.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.